Hello, brother. This is Jake Stenzano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing good. And before you jump into the show, I've got a few heartfelt words from my brother from another mother. And for those of you out there that have partners, every now and again, be nice to your partner. Because my partner a couple weeks ago was having this vertigo thing going on. He was sick. He was struggling. And yet, we had to close a deal. We were doing property tours with students, and we had this refi going on. And I heard him complain once that he felt a little sick, but never did he stop working his ass off. He never made a complaint and said, I can't do this. He was working from 6 in the morning to 6 in the afternoon, 12 hours plus, pulling all these different things through. And I just want to acknowledge that on the show and just say, we shouldn't take these things for granted. And it inspires me to work harder and not to make excuses as well. So you can look at it this way. And when you're looking for a partner, don't think of this 4-hour work week nonsense. Look for a partner who's going to work hard and work, especially when the chips are down and when things are really difficult. That's what you're looking for. When things are going great, everyone's performing. But when you hit some roadblocks and things are tough, that's the kind of partner you want in your corner. And Jake never complained, never stopped working, pulled a lot of stuff through. And unfortunately, as entrepreneurs, they expect the Jake Stenziano to do that work, and we're there. And no one ever says, hey, great job, bro. You just made $4 million for the company this week. Thank you. You just fed my family for the next generation. And no one says it other than your other partner, other people going through it. So those of you out there that have a leader, every now and again, stop and thank the leader, because it's thankless sometimes. And we're just expected to do things. And I know I went really long with the intro, but that's the way I feel. And I've been really, I don't want to say praying about it, but it's been on my mind for a while. And I don't want you to think that I take you for granted. And I know you put in a ton of work and a ton of effort. You love to do it. But sometimes it's nice to hear you did a freaking awesome job. And thanks for crushing it, bro.
Gino, I appreciate that. And you get me juiced up right now to the point where I want to do some push-ups. But I got a guy on the other end who could probably beat me and do more push-ups than me today. So we got an athlete on. So I got to take it easy there. But I appreciate that, man. So you are the man, and we got a very special guest today. Today's guest overcame initial rejection from the U.S. Navy, but by choosing to have elective open-heart surgery, he went on to serve as a team leader on multiple deployments, later on a SEAL instructor and master training specialist. He is also one of our speakers at Multifamily Mastery 6 this October. So without further ado, Chad Wright, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brother Jake and Gino. It's so great to be here, man. You guys are absolutely crushing it. I've been listening to your podcast all morning and had no idea the quality of content you guys are putting out, the value that you're putting out to your listeners for free, right? I'm super pumped about coming to the MM6 event because here's the thing, man. What I've realized in life is that all of us who are aspiring to be experts, all of us who are aspiring to master something that we are passionate about, we're all doing the same things, right? We're all implementing the same tactics, techniques, and procedures to get us to where we want to go. And it's so awesome to me that me, as a former Navy SEAL, as an ultra runner, as an entrepreneur, but in a whole different lane than you guys are in, I know that I can come and spend time with you and that I can learn things from you guys that you're doing in your industry that I can then take those same tactics, techniques, and procedures and apply them in ultra running. I can apply them in my own entrepreneurship journey. And so I know I'm going to learn things from you at the event, and I'm hoping to pass things on to you guys and to the people who are there from my journey that they can then apply in the industry that you're in, because it's all the same, dude. Mm-hmm. I went and picked up. So I've got an old 1983 Toyota Land Cruiser FJ60, old classic car, and I had it restored, and I just went and picked it up this past Wednesday. And the people that did it for me, the company that did it, they're the gold standard in restoring these Toyota Land Cruisers. I went and picked it up, and it was just another example of the things, the procedures, the techniques that they were using to restore these cars back to perfection. are the exact same things and principles and techniques that I'm using to win a 100-mile race. It's inspiring, man. And that's why I'm pumped to be out there with you guys, to be around professionals. I love being around passionate people. I don't care if you're freaking passionate about basket weaving, man. I don't care if you're passionate about cutting grass. I don't care if you're passionate about ultra running. I don't care if you're passionate about selling real estate. I don't care if you're passionate about restoring cars. I love to spend time in the company of passionate people, man. That's what fills me up, and that's why I'm pumped.
Man, that's
great.
Wow,
so I have so many questions from that. Let's say I'm listening to this, and I'm like, Chad, but I'm not really passionate. How do I get that passion? Because COVID's knocked people down, and it's taken people off their game. I never lost a passion because I had the family, so I was always inspired by having to provide for my family. But that only goes so far. And then I'm around Jake. I've been fortunate to have him as a partner for the last 15-plus years. So I've gotten my accountability, my motivation, my inspiration from him. What happens if you don't have that passion or you're lacking that passion? What should you do to try to claim some of that?
I think, first of all, Gino, I think we have got our perception of what passion actually is all out of whack, right? Because we got all the hippies out here telling us that being passionate about something looks like we're just going to be happy every single day and we're freaking unicorns and rainbows and everything's perfect. Man, that is not what passion is, man. Passion has highs and lows. Passion is when the days that you don't feel like doing whatever the crap it is you're supposed to do that day, you getting up and doing it anyways. Passion means that sometimes it gets so dang stressful that you don't sleep at night. It keeps you up at night, man. Passionate people are awake at night thinking about what it is they have to do the next day, especially when times get hard, man. So let's remember what passion is. Passion is means that you're engaged in the grind, man, that you're engaged in the struggle, it might be a low point, right? But you're still going to get up and you're still going to execute what you have control over that day, right? That's what it is. Now, that's what true passion looks like. Okay. It's not all this fluff. It doesn't mean every day you're excited. That's not what it means, man. So if you don't have true passion, the passion that I just described, the passion that is just keeping you up at night, just grinding through the hard time, Luke, life's a constant state of undulation. If you don't have that, maybe you need to find something else to do.
But and be real about it, Chad. Passion doesn't exist in the absence of struggle.
100%, man. That's what I'm talking about.
People want this fluff and this bullshit, but unless you're pushing yourself through things that are uncomfortable, you're never going to truly be passionate and get enjoyment and fulfillment out of life. I truly believe that. I don't think it exists.
You're exactly right, man. You know, I'm an outdoorsman, right? And the new thing and the kind of the younger generation of people is, you know, they think following their passion means selling everything they own and going to get a van and going out and living like a bum somewhere, you know, just living like a freaking bum, man. And it's like that's not passion, right? Because you're just trying to escape any struggle. You're just trying to escape any responsibility. You're just trying to escape any responsibility to lead, responsibility to grow something, responsibility to provide value to others. You're trying to escape all that. But that's what the world thinks following your passion looks like. It's all jacked up, man. A lot of things are jacked up this day. and our perspective of passion is one of those things that is screwed up. You've got to have growth only comes through tension, right? And the tension is what forges your desire or your passion to be doing what you're doing. When you move through that tension and you finally get up on a high, you kind of move through that low and you finally get to that high. And even though you're only there for maybe a few days or a few months, that's what really strengthens our desire and our passion to do what we do.
Now, Chad, usually I blame Jake for snowballing the interview and getting ahead of ourselves, but it's my fault this time. I wanted to get to know you a little bit about, you know, why the Navy SEALs, why the ultramarathoners, and ultimately
I want to hear the open hearts story here. I want to get into that.
But that one event that you had in 2012, you know, with the Lord, I mean, that's a really important story. So can we get a little bit of a background of your story and, you know, why the SEALs?
Yeah. Well, as a young man kind of here in Northwest Georgia, where I was born and raised, especially back in 06, 07, there's not a lot of opportunity, in my area that I grew up in, other than kind of manual types of labor, working on farms, construction, things like that. Which are awesome, can be awesome careers. But as a young man, I didn't like college. I didn't like school. I wasn't drawn to kind of go that route. So I was working a job in construction, and I just wasn't getting any fulfillment from that. I was just kind of checking the boxes, you know. And when I asked myself, why am I doing what I'm doing? There wasn't a good answer. And I just got to a place as a young man where I just felt like I had the epiphany, I guess I should say, not felt like I had the epiphany that if I didn't get out of my comfort zone, try something different, get out of that little small town, find something that was going to, make me special in my own unique way, that I was just going to be stuck in this place, just checking the box for the rest of my life. You know, so I saw a little ad banner pop up on a website way back in the day when the little ad banners would pop up, and it said Navy SEALs, the hardest training in the world. And something in my wiring is always drawn toward the hardest thing, just in every aspect of my life, entrepreneurship, faith, whatever. And that drew me to it, the fact that it was touted as the hardest thing that you could possibly go do. So that was the only thing that drew me to Navy SEALs. I don't like the water. I didn't even know how to swim. I weighed 220 pounds, so I could barely run.
Dude, you weighed 220 pounds?
Yeah, I weighed 220 pounds.
For the folks on YouTube, you got to be what? You got to be like 170 now, right?
Yeah, I'm a naturally, you know, just when I'm not, when I'm actually, you know, healthy, I'm 160, 165. So
I didn't want to go light, because it's like with guys, you go too light, they get weird. Girls, you go too light, they love you. I don't want to. So I was thinking 165 actually, but yeah. So 220, you're a big boy at that point, man. You had some jelly rolls.
The skinnier I am nowadays, the better off I am. I wish I weighed 140 pounds. The lighter I am, the faster I can run. So that was the only thing that drew me to the SEAL teams was the hardest. And so I joined the Navy. I had to pass a physical standards test to get a SEAL contract. That took me months and months to pass that test. It was a run, swim, push-up, pull-up, sit-up. And I finally passed it one time after taking it once a week for like 4 months straight. Got a SEAL contract, went to the Navy, went through Navy boot camp, got to the last day of Navy boot camp, and was getting ready to go graduate, and they pulled me out of the formation there with my boot camp class and sent me to medical. And the doctor there proceeded to tell me that they had found a pericardial cyst on my heart. It was a 7-centimeter cyst, and they found it on my chest x-ray. And it was a totally asymptomatic condition, which made it put me in a really tight spot because the Navy would not perform the surgery to remove the cyst because it was asymptomatic. But they were concerned as a SEAL, when I dove underwater, the pressure change would burst the cyst underwater. And so that was the only concern. So the cyst didn't disqualify me from being in the Navy. it just disqualified me from being a Navy SEAL because of the combat diving aspect of the
which was the reason you were there.
Yeah, which is the reason I was there. Exactly. That was what I had set my goal to go and do. So the Navy gave me two options. They said you can go out to be in the regular Navy, or you can get out of the Navy on breach of contract because you came here to be a SEAL. So I decided to get out of the Navy completely, went back to my little hometown here in Georgia, showed back up. I'd only been gone for a couple of months. And of course, everybody there thought I had quit or gave up. And I'm trying to explain to them, no, I actually have a heart condition that disqualified me from doing the job I wanted to do.
They're like, uh-huh, well, sure, Chad, uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, nobody freaking believes that, man. Yeah. You know what I mean? So nobody, dude, when I left to join the Navy, nobody thought I was going to make it through the SEAL program anyways, man. So, you know, they got to have their laugh and their fun. And I, in the meantime, was seeking out a heart surgeon here in the civilian world that would actually do this elective surgery for me. We went to multiple different surgeons before we found one, and that said, yeah, you want me to cut your chest open and take this thing off for no apparent reason? Yeah, we'll do that. And so that was a real blessing. And I went and had this heart surgery, had the cyst removed, and I was actually back in the Navy less than a year after I got out. So all of this happened in less than a year. And walked back into the same doctor that disqualified me, walked back into his office with my paperwork from my civilian heart surgeon. And he just looked at me like, dude, what are you doing back here? I already told you no. And I'm like, well, take a look at this paperwork here. And I'm hoping this will change your mind. They let me proceed with SEAL training. And I was actually the first Navy SEAL candidate to ever be diagnosed with a pericardial cyst. It's a very rare condition. They sent me off to BUDS, which is basic underwater demolition SEAL training. And I made it through, all the way through. Was never rolled or no issues at all. We started BUDS class 278 with about 300 men, and we graduated with about 12 original members. So I'm super proud of making it through all in one shot.
Hell yeah.
And that started my journey.
What was the hardest thing about the SEAL training? I mean, 300 to 12, that's like, what is that, 5%? That's 5% of the people remaining from the very beginning.
It's a lot of tap outs.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, when the guys would walk off, what would you do? What, you guys like chuckle to each other? There's another one. You're next, buddy. How's those the conversations go? I want to know the inside stuff here.
So for me, when I would see guys quit, it would just energize me. Yeah. You know, you don't judge those guys that quit. You don't.
Fucking miserable.
Yeah. It is what it is, man. Like it just wasn't for them, right?
Yeah.
But you just kind of took a little energy from that, and never did we say any words about it. We would just hear the bell ringing and. And it was like, okay, well, I'm still here.
You don't want to do that's the walk of shame right there. You're the bell ringing, you're heading out with your head down. That sucks, man. You don't want to.
But Chad, what was the hardest thing about it though? What? How did you persevere through that whole, you know, that whole ordeal?
Yeah. What was the most miserable part?
Well, everybody has their unique thing, right? So I can only tell you what was hardest for me. What hard is relative. I've learned that in life. Different things are hard for different people. Like. Gino, I assume you're not a runner, but you probably do a lot of jobs that would be extremely hard for me to do on my end, right? So you have your hard and I have my hard. And the same in SEAL training. The hard thing for me was the cold water. Yeah, it is brutal, man. So the hardest thing for me was called surf torture. In SEAL training, they make you swallow a little microchip, and the microchip sits in your gut so that throughout the day when they take you out into the cold Pacific Ocean and surf torture you, which is they lay you on your back and in the surf zone and the waves wash over you, and they keep you there for long periods of time. And every now and then they'll bring you up out of the water and they have a little scan gun that looks like the grocery store thing that you use to check out. And they point at your belly and scan that chip in your stomach to read your core body temperature. And so what they're doing is they're taking you right down into the mild stages of hypothermia. They've really got making you miserable down to a science in SEAL training. And that was the hardest thing for me, man. If the water would have been a little warmer, it would have been much easier for me personally.
I'm a Floridian. This whole vagus nerve and the cold plunge thing, that don't work for me. I'm sorry. I just not a big fan of that.
I think it's a cure for a hangover, though. I think it might be. The cold plunge might be the cure for the hangover. They got to stop
the
pills.
Well, you know what? Don't get hungover. That's the cure for the hangover. Don't drink so much that you get hungover. I'm just saying. That's my cure. Chad, as you're going through SEAL training and you graduate, talk about that experience that you had in 2012 that completely changed your life.
Yeah, so went on through SEAL training, graduated, went to my SEAL team, SEAL Team 8. I was there for the majority of my career. And so I had no faith in God, you know, as a man. I was actually a pretty, I'll be straight up with you, I was a pretty terrible person. I was hateful. I was mean, selfish. But you know, you can still do the job of a SEAL being hateful, mean. It kind of works out.
You've described about 80% of the population in the country, so you're not really different than many people in this country.
It's hard for me to be honest about who I was. Yeah. Back then, because I'm ashamed of who I was. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Men grow up a lot in their 20s, though. I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, men develop a little bit later, and there's a lot of personal growth and humility that takes place between 20 and 30.
And if you don't have the right role models to mirror, and you're not around the right people, and that's one of the things that you're feeding off of, and you're like, okay, this is who I'm looking at. This is who I'm trying to aspire to be. That's why it's so important to get into those rooms where you see people who are successful. And if you want to mirror their success, the better rooms you get into, the people who you want to mirror, that's who you're around. That's who you're going to start, you know, acting like, I think.
You nailed it, Gino. And I'm going to get to your question about what happened in 2012, but Gino, you nailed it, man. In the absence of leadership, there will be a catastrophe. If you do not have a good mentor or a good leader in your life, in your business, in your faith journey, if you choose not to lead as a father, as a husband, whatever it is, in the absence of leadership will produce a absolute catastrophe over time. Mm-hmm. So having mentors and people that you're around and that you can learn from and look up to is extremely important. I personally didn't have that. Now, I don't blame my own actions on that, but mm-hmm. I do acknowledge the fact that I didn't have that in my life, even in the SEAL teams. I did not work for a good leader until the last 2 years of my career, and I served for 12 years straight.
What makes a good leader, though? I mean, you say you didn't work for a good leader. What are the qualities that would produce a good leader?
Oh, well, there are so many qualities that compose a good leader. I would say the big ones we look for in the SEAL teams is leading by example, right? Leading from the front. We would expect a leader to be selfless. In other words, put his guys or put his teammates before himself, like cover for them, right? You know, try to filter the bull crap that comes down the pipe. It's a huge burden for a leader to do that. I think a leader needs to be able to empower their team members, make sure they have the training, the knowledge, the resources, and the confidence to do the job that the leader is asking them to do. Understanding chain of command. I mean, there's so many things that go into making a good leader. And I learned how important all these things were by serving with like serving under, and this is not a hit on anybody, but as a young SEAL, I learned how important these aspects of leadership were because they were absent in the platoons that I was serving in.
But you saw it in year 10 and 12, though. So I want to get into this a little bit more before you answer Gino's question, because this is all very important. In my corporate career, I came into an organization that had great leadership, had great culture, and it turned bad. So it sounds like yours, you went into poor leadership, but then you found that in year 10 or 12 or something like that. So was there an inflection point for you when you were exposed to that good leadership that started to change your life for the better?
Yes, 100%. So I, throughout my career, that 10 years, right? That 10 years where I was never fortunate enough to see an example of really good leadership, I was able to pick out the things that were missing. I mean, I was able to, even in my own mind, I was able to say, man, if things were done this way, and now in the military, though, it's weird because even as I'm picking up on these things and I'm seeing changes that can be made, I can't step up as a leader in the military. Like, there's something called the chain of command and rank structure. So, like, I can't just self-promote myself to lead the platoon. So I knew all these things that were missing. And so, yes, then when finally at the end of my career, I had a good, solid leader that was hitting all these boxes, I got to actually work with that person and see the fruits, the actual fruits that come about from hitting all those boxes that I and the guys around me knew were missing. You know, it wasn't just me in a platoon that has a bad or a platoon that has an incompetent leader. It's not just me that's suffering. It's everybody in the platoon that's suffering. Everybody feels it, man.
But Chad, what's ironic is the SEALs are the top of the top. They're the creme de la creme. And yet they still lack leadership sometimes, it sounds like. How does that work? Because we're known, they're notorious for being amazing at operating, amazing at doing great things. And yet there sounds like there's some problem with leadership there as well. How does that work?
Yeah, so there now in the SEAL teams, there are probably some of the best leaders on earth that are part of the SEAL teams, right? But there aren't enough of them to go around. Mm-hmm. Like a really strong leader, like they're not a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. So even within the SEAL teams, there's not enough of them to go around. In my first platoon, my platoon chief was an incompetent leader and he actually got fired. And the SEAL teams could not muster another leader to fill that role as a platoon chief. So we moved forward through the rest of our workup and deployment without a leader at all because they couldn't find anyone to fill that leadership role because real leaders are so rare and it takes so much time to develop them. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't even think about leading people in a real way until I was, you know, in my 30s, early 30s.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to develop them. And they're rare. They're not a dime a dozen. So, man, if you've got good leadership, you should be thankful for that, right? Really, you should be thankful for that. And if you desire to lead, understand it's going to take a ton of time, a ton of dedication, a ton of mistakes, a lot of learning to get you to the point where you can lead properly.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah.
The story, 2012.
Yes. So I was on deployment in 2012. I'll just cut to the chase. I won't beat around the bush with you guys. I was living in a building that was inhabited by some sort of demon. I don't understand demons or spirits or any of that stuff. But
I met one last time I went to New York.
I'm sure there's a lot of demons in New York.
We'll leave that for another time. Sorry.
Yeah, man. So this weird stuff, man, I'm laying in my bed one night. Something slams into my door, jolts me awake. I'm hearing voices up and down the hallway. It's just me and three other guys staying in this place. So I wake up, My teammate that's rooming with me in there, he's asleep. I walk across the hallway. The other guys that are in the building are asleep. I get freaked out, man. Now, this kind of stuff, these crazy things moving and bumps and sounds and noises, it continues to happen. The other guys that are with me, they start noticing it and experiencing it. There's this really strong feeling of oppression that's like bearing down on us. I don't know if it was from lack of sleep or this presence, right? But we're really feeling oppressed and burdened by something that we can't explain. And by the end of about a week, we were all sleeping in the same room together. We were so freaked out by this thing that was whatever this thing was, right? And we didn't know what to do about it. We didn't know what it was or how to fight it, because we're trained to fight as SEALs with weapons of man, you know, rifles, pistols, a knife, if you're lucky enough to get to kill someone with a knife. But we didn't know how to fight back against this thing. And so I called my little brother back stateside and told him what it was. And he put me in touch with his pastor. His pastor calls me overseas. I put this guy on speakerphone. I have no other options. This is all I know to do. I put this guy on speakerphone. We walk around this building while this guy is praying in the name of Jesus. And I'm just like, well, this is silly, but I don't know what else to do. And we're sick of dealing with this. We can't sleep, and it just doesn't feel good in here. He prays all around this place. He tells me take a little bit of olive oil. I had a little kitchen in there where we were staying, so I took a little olive oil. He said, just dip your finger in it and just put it over the door where you're staying at. So I did that, thought it was absolutely silly. Got done, went to bed that night, nothing. Everything, no fear, no noises, no nothing. Wake up the next morning and that little dab of olive oil I had put over my door had actually somehow covered the entire door. My buddy that was in the room with me, he looks at the door. He says, what the crap's all over the door? Somehow this little dab of olive oil had expanded and covered the entire door. I look back at him. I didn't tell him any of those guys I did any of that because I thought it was sounding crazy. I said, dude, I don't know what happened to the door. Don't worry about it.
Oh, dude, you got to step up, man.
Dude, no, this is all new to me, man. This is all new to me. And so this just peace returned back to this place. And I would have been a fool to have had that experience and not then went and said, okay, there's some power here. Let me... I know the Bible tells me about this Jesus, whom I heard this man praying in the name of and whom fixed the problem I was having here and my teammates were having. So I started reading the Bible, and it everything in the Bible makes sense to me. And I made the choice to give my life to Christ, accept him as my Lord and Savior. And I woke, it changed. Overnight, when I gave my life to Christ, it just changed everything about me, man. The way I treat others, my outlook on life, the way I talk, it changed everything about me. I got it all in one shot. And so I'll never forget that day. I'll never forget that experience. I'll never forget that transformation. It's the most powerful transformation that's ever happened in my entire life. Can't make it up. I couldn't have did it by myself. And so I have no other explanation for it other than the God of the Bible is real and there's power in the name of Jesus Christ. And I believe he is who the Bible says he is. Wow. And it's such a huge part of who I am, man.
And you have the 3 of 7 project. Let's dive into what you're doing, because I think that's really cool. That, you know, the three parts, the Blessed Trinity, the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Can you jump into that real quick for us?
Yeah, totally. So... I do believe, and I don't think you have to be a Christian, or I don't even think you have to be religious to acknowledge the fact that your person is made up of a fleshy body, mm-hmm. And then you have your soul, which is categorized as your mind, your will, and your emotions. So we all have, you know, some understanding of the fact that we have a mind, we have emotions, we have things we want to do and things we don't want to do. And then we have a part of us that is our spirit, which is almost like our consciousness, which is humans cannot explain the spirit, right? Science cannot explain human consciousness. Science cannot even explain the origin of life. If you think about that, the origin of life itself, when did something become conscious? Science can't explain that. And so that would be the indwelling spirit that actually gives us life. And so when we look at ourselves, we have to recognize those three aspects of ourselves. They are very intertwined. In a lot of ways, they depend on one another. Our body, our soul, and our spiritual health depend on one another. And so when I look at how am I living my life, what am I doing to be in the position that I'm in right now, which I believe I am the most complete version of myself right now that I've ever been in my whole life. What did I do to get here? Every single day, I do something to improve or nourish the condition of my physical health. I do something to improve or nourish the condition of my mental health. And I do something to improve or nourish the condition of my spiritual health. And I do those three things intentionally every day. It can look different from day to day, but I make sure I have a plan for that. And that's what's got me to the point that I feel like I am today, man. So everything we do in 307 Project, all of our training exercises, all missions, all of our podcast, all the content that we put out should revolve around teaching people how to master, nourish, and maintain their body, soul, and spirit to become the most complete version of themselves. Now, I get a little sidetracked sometimes on politics and my own opinion, but that's because I'm human, right? But that's the mission of 307 Project.
Jake, before we go to the short answer section, take a break, I believe a lot of what Chad's talking about, when you look back at Christianity, all the things that have made people successful, when you're going on hikes, when you're in nature, when you're taking retreats, when you're working on yourself, when you're reflecting, when you're praying, when you're in these states, it's really, I mean, it's what the body needs and it's what it nourishes. And what we have today, as far as cities, as far as being connected all the time, as far as all that noise all the time, I don't think that's the way the Lord wanted us to live. So everyone's going back to, I even give you another thing. I'm doing something called descriptive writing, where I write down my thoughts every day on a piece of paper, negative, positive, and then I rip them up. I mean, we've been doing that in Catholicism, Christianity for a long time, where you just want to get your thoughts and your energy out there and reflect. And a lot of us aren't doing that. So those three steps, go back, everybody, and listen to what Chad said. If you can work on those three every day and hit on it, and I'm actually doing that every day. I'm either running or I'm swimming every day and walking on top of that. I'm trying to read the Bible every single morning for 5 minutes. I'm trying to reflect. And then obviously I'm trying to do stuff with the business and I'm trying to incorporate all that. And if you can do that and start your morning or at least end the day like that, that's a great way to work on yourself and a great way to have, I guess, a great outlook on life and really have that reflection and really, for me, to work on yourself and to become a better person. I think that has really helped me out in the last few years to reflect. And then I think that gratitude piece is really important. A lot of us do not have enough gratitude. But I'm speaking for myself now. I have so many amazing things going on in my life, but sometimes you focus on the things that aren't going well when, man, we live in the best country on the planet. We have so much opportunity. We have like first world problems. And for me to be able to reflect and do what you said and sit down and carve out that time throughout the day has brought a lot of joy to me and it brought a lot of peace to myself as well.
Gino, man, you're awesome, dude. You're awesome. You know, it's the first time I've gotten to sit down and talk to you and to Jake I'm just getting so filled up by the comments that you guys are making. It's spot on, man. And I think it goes back to the genesis of our conversation when we talked about we're all doing the same things. Mm-hmm. I'm doing the same thing as an ultra runner as you guys are doing in the real estate industry. We're all applying the same things, man. And it just really fills me up to hear you say, especially what you just said, Gino, and good on you, man. That inspires the crap out of me, dude.
Thank you.
Guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
All right, we're back. I want to piggyback off what you guys are saying there, because I was talking to my wife last night about technology, and I really think we got to disconnect as a culture, because it's taking the wonder out of life. And some of the simplest things, like being out in the woods, getting some sun, getting a little lost in your life, like literally not knowing where you are, maybe going on a hike or something. These things are missing from so many people, and everything's readily available. So we don't have to figure stuff out. It's at the, at our fingertips instantly. And I'm just so fortunate that I grew up in a time where we didn't have cell phones. I didn't have a cell phone until I think I was like 21 or something then. And I grew up in the woods, and it's just that life, I think so many people will never experience, is a shame. And it's a dulled down, dumbed down version of existence. And I'm kind of, I'm kind of saddened by it in a way. We'll see how things, keep changing. But it's the speed that we're moving. I don't know. We'll sort of see how we end up with all this.
What you're talking about and what Chad said in the beginning of the show is very important. The reason why he's talking about passion and the struggle, you just said it. Most of us aren't struggling nowadays because it's so easy. We have GPS. No one has to pull out a map anywhere. I mean, if you need food, you can get it delivered to your house. You don't have to grow it anymore. It's so a lot of the things when you struggle as an entrepreneur, there's not as much
struggle.
We're
becoming like little pod bunnies. Like we're living in this little pod with no existence. It's
and
sad.
For those of us that have to struggle and understand the struggle, that's why I want my children to struggle. That's why it's important to have your children struggle and to let them figure it out, because they'll grow the muscle and they will become ultimately the leaders. So,
yeah.
You know, humans are a weird thing. I was thinking about this last night. I did a long sauna session last night, got in the cold tub, and got out. It was pitch dark, and I'm just staring up at the moon and thinking about, I know I'm not a weirdo hippie, guys, don't take me wrong, but like I love taking time to reflect, and it applies to what Jake just said, because humans are weird creatures, man. Like when has humanity ever just paused? Especially in the context of technology, when have we ever paused and just said, or asked ourselves why? Like, it is what we have now good enough? Why don't we just pause and say, why? The way we live now is amazing. Why do we need to keep piling more crap on?
What's real fulfillment look like? Right? What is real nourishment to the body look like? Is it another, ChatGPT, robot taking over the world text message? Or is it something fulfilling with your family, working with your hands a little bit? Like, we're missing on the big picture here at times.
Yeah. And I think that we have to be, we all should be, for our own personal mental health, we should look at the technologies that we use and we should say, why am I really using this? Like, do I really need this? Or is it just simply because I don't want to make the effort to kind of do it the more holistic way? So it's okay to say no to some of the new technologies that continuously unfold. Like, the ChatGPT is the newest one, and I'm hearing people say, oh yeah, this thing writes emails for me, it returns text messages for me, and it's just so convenient. And I'm sitting here and I'm like, well, like, there's no genuineness in that. Like, you're just using this just because it's there, and it's actually going to be destructive, more than likely. Like, why don't you just say no to that? And it's because you're lazy. You just you want You want convenience above all else.
Yeah.
You want convenience above genuineness. Mm-hmm.
It's like we're all going to be these matrix pods where we're just hooked up to cords. And it's like, that's it seems it's fucking where it's going, man. It's just,
I hope it'll all end before that happens.
How, Chad, on the personal level, what's your day to day look like? How rural are you living? I grew up, interestingly, I never really shared this. My dad was actually off the grid for the first few years of my life. And we lived like literally a mile. The house was down in this gulch and it was a mile dirt road to get to it. And it was in, it had it hooked up. The electricity was actually hooked up to a garage, like this old barn at the top of the hill. So no one knew we were down there and we were out there, had the little garden going and whatnot. So that was my first, you know, when I was growing up, that's how it was. And so my dad, that was always his thing, that he wanted to be fully kind of off the grid out there. And now we got like 3 acres where I am now. We're a half hour out of town, but I'm, you know, sometimes I'm like, man, do we want to go out like 2 hours and get like 50 acres and just squat up? Like, how are you living personally now? And what are your thoughts on all that?
Yeah. So, I live on a 500 acre piece of property in Northwest Georgia in the mountains. And
so you're already there. You're already there where maybe I'll be your neighbor.
I live in a log cabin and, you know, we have honeybees and we probably grow 80% of our food in the summertime right out in front of the house. And you know, I intentionally drive a 1983 Toyota Land Cruiser that's carbureted and won't go over 60 miles per hour.
He's ready for the EMP, Gino.
I also leverage technology.
Yeah.
In healthy ways, because, you know, I don't agree with the whole off the grid or just going full hermit. Like there are parts of me that the selfish parts of me want to go full hermit. And I have the knowledge, resources, and the ability to do that. And I do have to fight against that. But like, man, it should be all of our purpose in this life to serve one another, right? Mm-hmm. And so I leverage social media. I mean, I have a podcast. I use technology. But again, I ask myself, why am I using it? And the parts of my life that I have control over to where I can kind of go backwards a little bit, but still be serving my fellow man and fulfilling my purpose in life, I have to find a balance to where those two things can coexist, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that's really cool. We're getting short on time. Give us an awesome badass breacher story from your time in the SEALs before we get off here.
Oh my gosh, man.
Let's hear about blowing some shit up real quick.
I'll go back to Breacher School, I guess, because that was my favorite school I ever attended while I was in the U.S. Navy. Breacher School is held out in on a remote base that really nobody knows about, way back in the woods. And we get out there and we grow our beards out and we destroy stuff every single day for like 3 months straight, man.
Sounds like a 12-year-old's dream.
Right? Oh, it's unbelievable, dude. So breaching for me was a lot of fun because, you know, again, I worked on farms and construction and stuff like that prior to joining the Navy. So I knew how to run all these mechanical breaching tools like chainsaws, quickie saws, pry bars, all this stuff. So I really, really flourished in that school, but it's also a dangerous job. So I guess a story, we were breaching a door one time in breacher school, and with a breaching charge, you actually tamp the charge. You can tamp the explosive with the best thing to tamp a charge with is an IV bag. So water, if you put an IV bag on the back of an explosive charge, when the charge detonates, it's going to send the force of the explosion in one direction. The direction that you want it to go, which is into the door. You want to direct the whole power, the whole force of that explosion into the obstacle you're trying to defeat. Well, one time we tamped a charge with a strip of rubber, a piece of rubber tire, right? So when the charge went off, the rubber absorbed a lot of energy, but at the same time, it detached from the charge and it flew backwards and it hit a guy in the cheek. And the rubber actually went through his cheek and came out his mouth. And so here's a guy standing here with a strip of rubber that just got reverse blown off of an explosive hanging out his mouth and through his
cheek.
Looks
like a fish hook.
It's just like a fish hook. Oh, shit. They just laughed about it, man. It's a crazy job, man. It's I wish I could buy explosives as a civilian, because I'd be out here having all kinds of fun.
I'm sure you can rig something up if you need to.
I've been to that school too, yeah. But
we'll leave that off air, right?
I try my best to stay within the boundaries of the law, although it's difficult at times.
You know, you got 500 acres. What's the law of your 500 acres? All right, my friend.
Yeah.
All right, Gino. Let's bring it home here.
So Chad Wright is a young guy in Northwest Georgia. He's working construction jobs, and one day he's surfing the net. Don't know what he's looking at, but he says an ad pops up and says, Navy SEAL, tough job. And he's like, you know what? I'm attracted to hard stuff, so let me join. Let me see what happens. He joins. He's there for a while, and he finds out that he has this heart problem, and he quits. He's got to leave, and he goes back, and everyone at home is going, Chad, you're a loser. I knew you'd quit. But Chad's like, didn't quit, just couldn't do it. And going around finding out all
the
doctors.
Cut it out,
and
he finally
finds one that does cut it out. Then he goes back into that room and he sees that doctor again. The doctor's like, what are you doing back here? You shouldn't be back here. And he rejoins, he re-ups, goes to Bud School, 300 men, 15 standing. He's one of the 15 standing. And he goes on to have a long career. I mean, 12 years in the Navy SEALs. And I guess the 10th year, he finally realizes what leadership is all about. It took 10 years for him to find the right leaders, and you may be out there in an organization. If you don't have the right leadership, maybe it's time for you to stand up as a leader. But that interaction with the Lord changed his life, and now he's out. He's an entrepreneur. He's grown his business to the 3 of 7 project, coming to speak at MM6. Using social media. So that's the thing with technology. Technology is great. He's on Instagram. He's on Facebook, but he's using it judiciously and he's using it proactively. He's using it for the right reasons, not just to waste his time, but to, I guess, to embellish his life and actually using it as a tool, not just as a distraction. So listen, it's been an honor.
And to help others too, right?
Yeah, it's been an honor and a privilege to have you on the show today, Chad. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Chad, real quick, what's the hub and the best place for folks to reach out and get a hold of you and your companies?
It's just 3of7project.com. Yeah, okay. Everything's attached there. And I hope to get to meet a lot of the listeners at MM6, man.
Yes.
So if you guys listen to this show, if it comes, I hope it comes out before the event. If it does, or whatever, come up and say hey to me and have a chat with me. I hope to be able to meet a lot of the people that listen to the show there. So
Chad said Sunday morning after church, he's teaching breacher class in the main hall. So we got this.
I don't know if the hotel resort would be too happy about that.
We do what we want to do. So, gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. Chad, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.